Kumail Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon are married, and they're also a stellar writing-producing duo. They excel at taking real-life stories and making them into smart and heartfelt TV and film. Their critically acclaimed and Oscar-nominated movie, The Big Sick, told the actual story of how their relationship started when early on, Emily was put into a medically induced coma, and Kumail struggled between following his heart and pleasing his family by committing to marry a Pakistani woman. They've taken on subjects and projects, both big and little, together and solo, finding humor in serious subjects and taking humor seriously. They are the executive producers of the Apple TV Plus's show Little America, which tells fictionalized versions of true immigrant stories, ranging from a Nigerian college student who connects with Oklahoma Cowboys to an undocumented teenage Latina with behavioral issues at school who goes on to be a national squash champion. And recently, they've led us into their real life with pandemic-friendly podcast, Staying In with Emily and Kumail, because Emily's immunocompromised. So this is not their first quarantine rodeo. They've been offering really, really good advice and insight on how to live your best indoor life. Plus, all the proceeds from the podcast are going to a good cause. Kumail, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Emily, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you for having us.
So we'll talk about your projects, but I want to go all the way back in the Wayback Machine. Emily, what was your first creative collaboration with Kumail?
I think that must have been, was Indoor Kids first, or was Meltdown first, Kumail?
I think Indoor Kids was first.
I think Meltdown was first. So Kumail and I put together a live stand-up show that I produced, and Kumail was the co-host of, along with our friend Jonah Ray, and I think that was our first time creatively collaborating together.
So Kumail, as you started to work with Emily, why did you realize she was a good collaborator for you? Some people can be in love and then can be with their best friends but would never work with them. Why is she a good collaborator?
Well, she's for many, many reasons. You know, for writing, she's just such a great writer. She understands character so well, and she's just so good at relationships that, and because she's a therapist, she's also very good at dealing with difficult personalities. So collaborating with her is easier because she knows how to sort of lay down bad news in a way that's not devastating. But more than anything, she's just very, very calm, very cool, and just like a truly, truly great writer. I find it such a privilege that many of the things she writes, I'm the first person in the world that gets to read them.
And for someone who said, did he say therapist? He said, you said therapist. Emily, you were a therapist at one point. Do you find that does come in handy working in Hollywood?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was a practicing therapist for about 6.5 years. And I mean, you can make all the jokes about like, oh, everybody's crazy in Hollywood. But it really is more, it's more just that I feel like I have this kind of, my education is in handling people and in mm-hmm. dealing with people and in understanding what people are saying versus what they're actually meaning. And that has been surprisingly effective when kind of dealing with executives or dealing with other collaborators that often when it comes to being creative, there's a lot of ego involved, and understanding that ego will kind of do anything to protect itself has served me quite well, both personally and professionally.
No, I imagine it's an amazing skill set to have.
It helps with your writing too, though, because, you know, generally in life, people aren't saying how they're feeling. You have to sort of figure out how they're feeling based on cues and what they're not saying, as Emily just said. That really helps in writing characters, you know. Rarely in life are people like, I am angry. So she's very good at having characters convey what they're feeling without saying what they're feeling.
Let's talk about Little America,
which you
co-produced with Lee Eisenberg. And he came to you with the concept of the show of taking these real-life stories from Epic Magazine but fictionalizing them. So, Emily, in terms of like understanding people and characters, you had your own life fictionalized on screen. So what was something that you were sensitive about that maybe another filmmaker or writer might not know? What sort of insight did you have after seeing your own life in The Big Sick?
I think what we learned in adapting our story was just the idea that just because something is very, very meaningful to you doesn't necessarily mean that it's kind of cinematically meaningful. Mm-hmm. but finding the version of that that is. And so I think for us, we spent a lot of time being like, well, this was important to us. This moment was important to us. It doesn't really, like, it's kind of not translating in the scripts, and it's not maybe not translating cinematically. So what were the emotions under that? Like, what did that actually mean when we were going through that? What were the emotions under it? And then can we build something that kind of emotionally has the same resonance, but isn't just kind of looks a little bit cooler? And I think that that helped us with Little America. We worked with a lot of really, really wonderful writers for the first season of this show. And they all kind of seemed to get that. It wasn't that we brought like some beautifully special skill to it, but I do think that the idea of like, hey, we don't have to stick exactly to the facts. We just have to kind of stick to the emotional resonance and tell the best story. And also realizing that everyone's life contains every genre of movie. Everyone's life is a comedy, is a horror, is a romance. And we can
definitely
only tell
a horror
one story.
Right now.
Yeah. And that we can only tell one story, and that doesn't mean those other stories aren't important. You can just only tell one story at a time. So I think that's a little bit of what we brought to it.
So Camille, the title evokes a lot with just two little words, because in big cities all across the country, you have these little ethnic enclaves, like Little Tokyo, Little India. So when you think about the title, Little America, what do you think it means, or what does it mean to you in relation to the show's mission?
I think what it shows is there's no such thing as Little America, you know? I mean, America's big, and it contains a lot of people from all over the world who look at the world differently, who look different, who sound different. To me, that's what it conveys. I feel like we're in a time where certain groups have defined American in a very, very narrow way. And I think one of the things that we wanted to convey with this show was there's no definition. There's no way that an American looks or sounds. America looks and sounds like the world.
My guests are Camille Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon. We're talking about Little America, their series on Apple TV Plus. It's such a great, everyone is like this little perfect jewel, like each little episode. And I want to talk about the one called The Rock, because this is one that you two co-wrote with Lee. And it's about this gentleman named Faraz. He's a dad. He's an aspiring homeowner. It's in Yonkers, which is in our neck of the woods. And he just wants to make a living and make a life. And there's just this moment when he hands his business card to a waitress because he's trying to sell her quail eggs. And the business card says, beekeeper, quail egg merchant, pistachio farmer, roller skating instructor. Who came up with that list?
It's pretty close to the actual guy.
Really? Yeah. Holy cow.
Go ahead, Camille.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to say, yeah, those are all the different hustles that the guy it's based on had. And we actually had to take him out. He was also an avid hand glider. And he would, you know, so in the episode, he basically buys this property and there's a massive rock on it. And the whole episode is him trying to figure out how to get rid of this massive rock so he can build his dream home. And he talks about how, in real life, he talks about how he'd go hand gliding. And from up there, he liked flying over his property because the rock looked really small from up there. We were going to put it in the episode, but that's just too much. This guy's life is way too fascinating for just a half hour of the show.
Emily, what was compelling to you about Faraz's story?
Oh, I just thought that was when we kind of first heard the initial stories of the people that were being profiled by Epic Magazine, which is the source of all of the stories for the season. I just really, really connected to that story because I do feel like there's something like so metaphorically beautiful about it's just kind of you versus this like monstrous, enormous thing. And you may never defeat it. You may never beat it. You can kind of learn to live with it. You can perhaps kind of get it a little bit smaller. But all of us have those obstacles in our lives that are just kind of massive that we never think are going to move, but we get up every single day and we keep trying. So I thought it was both metaphorically beautiful and also just kind of very funny and a lovely story. It's a very small story overall, like no one's life is at stake, but it's a very big story to the character. So I think that's what drew me to that story initially.
Right, because he buys this piece of property with this enormous rock on it because he started looking for houses, and he's a proud man, and he realizes he can't afford the kind of home that's in his dream. And I want to listen to a clip from the episode. I want to play a clip where Faraz is going on house tours with a realtor, and he has this very telling exchange with the real estate agent. This is from the episode The Rock from Little America.
Great time to invest right here in Yonkers. It's exactly like New York, but less loud and much cheaper. The city that sleeps.
You know, I love Yonkers. My son, Berot, goes to SUNY Lehman. 3.65 GPA, business administration. He's also a musician, like Bono from U2. You know, I want a home where he can have a room to practice his drums and for my wife to have a home office. You know, she is an expertise tailor.
This is the place. Bang for your buck, only going up, up, up.
And my credit score is 710.
You mentioned that a few times. Don't worry, we'll find you a better place than you had in Iran.
You know, people think I escaped Iran. I had a good life in Iran, a great life. I came to America to provide my family new and excellent opportunities. That was my choice. So please, don't feel sorry for me.
That's great. I'm sorry, I didn't mean anything by it.
It's okay.
Such a lovely clip. Kamel, when you were developing this project, you know, was it on your mind that it would be a vehicle for a lot of actors who might not get to play complex characters like this, and they might have an opportunity in the series?
I mean, that's one of the most exciting parts about the show, right? So for us, the actor who plays him, Sean Tobe, was on set one day, and he told Emily, he was like, I've never been in every single scene of anything I've done. He's a guy who looks familiar to you, you know? He was in the first Iron Man. He helped Tony Stark make the first Iron Man suit. So he played sort of different small parts here and there, but he was like, I've never been in every scene. It's exhausting. So
that's an exhaustion I bet he liked, though. I mean, because he was on Homeland. Yeah. It's a great kind of exhaustion.
Yeah, he's so talented, obviously, and he can obviously carry that episode, he can carry a movie. You know, that was one of the most exciting things, was we were forced to find actors who weren't on like the traditional lists that casting folks have when you're casting something. And every episode is completely different. So we had to find a massive cast from all over the world who looked and sounded completely different from most people who get to be the lead of TV shows in America. So it was really exciting to find those people and to find people who were so, so very, very talented. And it showed, you know, a lot of times people are like, well, it's hard to find diverse cast. It's a little hard, but you can find really, really talented people. They're out there.
And I should say shout out to our casting people who are tremendous and continue to be tremendous.
And it's really great at the end of the show, you get to see a picture of the real person. It's this wonderful moment in the show. Emily, this has been signed on for a second season, is that right?
That is right. Mm-hmm.
And how has this moment affected that? Does it mean you have to wait?
we have written all of the episodes for season two. I think one is maybe still being worked out, but we had our writer's room was over Zoom for a good portion of the time, and then we are not 100% sure when we're going to be able to shoot the show safely. Our show requires a new cast every episode, requires new mm-hmm. locations every episode. So it's got its own challenges, and we're kind of listening to what the experts are saying. We're listening to what the people kind of Apple is saying. We're kind of everybody. There's a lot of factors at play, but we're not going to shoot the show until we can do it safely, I'll say.
And you know, as Emily was hinting at, we fly in actors from all over the world. That's obviously going to be challenging. We don't want to compromise the quality of the show, but in this moment, honestly, you know, we were waiting to come on and talk to you, and we were listening to the news again, and I feel like sometimes I think the main priority should be safety. TV shows can wait, movies can wait. I feel sort of, I don't understand how people are talking about shooting things right now, to be honest. I just feel like, guys, this is a global pandemic. Let's take a beat. TVs aren't going
anywhere. Yeah, we are excited to bring the show to you again. We want to do it safely. That's basically it.
My guests are Kamel Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon. So let's talk about your podcast, Staying In with Emily and Kamel. You know, I'm broadcasting from my house, guys, and my FedEx guy will not get off the buzzer. So I'm sorry about that.
I was wondering, I was like, that could be us. There's a chance that's us. I wasn't sure.
No, I don't have a doorman.
You got You got something from FedEx. That's exciting.
Who knows? Who knows? Okay, so wait. Back
do you know
to the,
what it is?
I don't. I didn't order anything. I've been trying to be very careful about that. So I don't. It could be a book. Absolutely. A lot of books get delivered to the house now. So maybe there's some great book that will be in my vestibule. Enough about my living room. Okay, so you guys are longtime experts in staying indoors, and I'm curious from your feedback, what part of your expertise do people seem to find most useful? There's a lot of great advice you give, but what are people telling you is really helping them?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the feedback we've gotten the most is people feeling just less alone. I think, you know, there's a lot of people who are sheltering in place literally by themselves, and people who are feeling kind of anxious about how they're feeling. I think there's two levels. There's how you're feeling, and then there's the judgment about how you're feeling. And I think if anything, our podcast kind of gave people a little bit of permission to just feel how they're feeling, that there's a period of grieving, there's a period of anger, there's a period of kind of misery and despair, and that all of those things are normal. These are all kind of normal reactions to a very abnormal time we're going through. So I feel like that's the most feedback we've gotten.
Camille, what are you getting out of it? How is it helping you?
It's helping me by forcing me to sort of put, as Emily was saying, we're going through so many different emotions all the time, and I find sometimes as a man who grew up not being completely in touch with my feelings, sometimes it takes me a little while to even know how I'm feeling. So in talking to Emily, it sort of forced me to put a label on things in a way that's been very useful. Like, for instance, in the last couple of weeks, I'd been feeling a little bit, I'd sort of gotten anxious again. I found my temper was short again, and I realized that I was getting anxious about things reopening too quickly. And that was affecting my mood. Now, I cannot do anything about how other people are reacting to the pandemic and or the reopenings or anything like that. I'll go on my Instagram, and it's full of restaurants that are like, hey, we're open. Come on, have a drink. I'm like, you guys should read a newspaper. I know I can't do anything about that, but what I can do is put myself emotionally in a place where I'm not in crisis all the time. So talking that stuff out has been really helping me. Just knowing why I'm feeling and what I'm feeling is such a big part of the battle.
Camille, you said a little bit. I've been listening. It's a lot you're anxious about reopening.
Yeah.
Emily laughs. You know.
That's right. That's correct.
I feel like sometimes with my friends or people I talk to that I'm like the Debbie Downer. And that's, people who know me know I'm not that. I'm a very, very, generally a very, very optimistic person. I always have been. So now I feel bad when my friends are like, hey, so we're going to be able to go out. I'm like, I don't think I'm leaving the house. I don't think you should, but it's not my job to tell you how to live. So yes, there's a lot of anxiety. I hope I'm wrong. I hope things go great, and in a week the virus is gone.
And Emily, you are wonderfully loving about it, but you're tough about it too with Camille. And
yes,
for someone,
and I will say,
go
we
ahead.
We talk outside of the podcast as well. But it is interesting that we don't really get into it so much until we are recording together, which I think is interesting. And I do find myself kind of slipping back into my previous role as a therapist when we are recording, and he's bringing me some nonsense.
What is a piece of it? What is something you really want people to know? Because you have had to go through this, and in all seriousness, because of your health. And one of the reasons Camille is so concerned is because he loves you so much, and he wants to make sure that you're all right. That's at the heart of all of that. When you think about, you've had to kind of live a bit of your life like this, Emily, what advice do you have for people so that they can think about doing this for a while?
I guess just, and by the way, yes, it's absolutely true that Camille takes amazing care of me. He's the reason, absolutely the reason that I'm alive today in many, so I kind of kid with him, but I understand where it's all coming from, and I love him for it. I think overall it's doing your best to kind of embrace where you're at and realizing that you can't change the rest of the world, and you can't, and sometimes things are unfair, and sometimes things are awful. Sometimes things are unfair, and you still have to kind of keep going anyway. And I feel like people who have had a lot of health problems, like myself, I kind of wasn't shocked by any of this stuff, by how scary COVID was, by the lockdown, because I think when you've gone through a lot of physical issues, you just kind of get the sense of like, this is something that can happen. Our bodies are fragile things. Like, none of this is a foregone conclusion that we're going to be okay. And I know that sounds really downery, but I found a bit of freedom in it too, of like, how precious and how grateful we need to be for things, because none of this is, because it is all so fragile. Everything is quite fragile. And to find the beauty in the smaller lives, and to find the beauty in the smaller emotions we're having, and then sitting on our back porches, we don't have anywhere else to go, because you can stay angry and you can stay upset and stay, oh, it's not fair, but okay, now what? We have to kind of keep moving. So I feel like a lot of people are waking up to how I've kind of felt for a few years, which is like, yeah, sometimes stuff is not fair. We got to keep moving. And what does that look like?
Kumail, listen to your wife. She's smart.
Yeah, no. I stopped listening after she said I saved her life because I love her so much. So what did I miss?
My guests have been Kumail Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon. Their new show is called Little America. Thank you guys so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Nice talking to you.